Welcome to A Life in Film. I'm Elliot James Langridge. I'm an actor, writer, and apparently a podcaster, and I love film. This is the podcast that we ask our guests from in front and behind the camera, how did they get their foot in the door? What was the key to unlocking their success? What's their story?
Previous guests include Toby Jones, Hugh Bonneville, casting director Sophie Holland, Scott Adkins, and Phil Dunster. Today's guest is Jennifer Houston, the three-time Emmy Award-winning casting director of Orange is the New Black, HBO's Girls, and Steven Spielberg's produced The Pacific. We talk about the do's and don'ts that actors should know before auditioning for her, how she worked her way up from an assistant on movies such as Zoolander to becoming the well-respected casting director she is today, with movies such as Edgar Wright's Scott Pilgrim vs. the World and Oscar-nominated movie Can You Ever Forgive Me, how she found her feet while working on Gangs of New York with Martin Scorsese, her love of Michael Keaton and why she cast him in hit comedy The Other Guys alongside Will Ferrell and Mark Wahlberg, and of course we discuss her most embarrassing casting moment. It's a life and fail! 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 Woo! I'm not going to make this all about me, but I'll tell you a little story.
I'd rather make it all about you. This is what I do. If you come into my room, like, before we even start, like, before we start auditioning or anything, I'm just like, what's your deal? Tell me about you. Where are you from? What's going on?
Cool. Oh, that's nice. It eases people up, doesn't it?
Well, of course, because they'll do their best work if they're relaxed, you know, and they feel comfortable. So that's always something that's really important to me, is make you feel as comfortable as possible and then trick you into doing a really good audition without being nervous.
That is the tricky thing. I find that, because I'm dyslexic, so I really I get paranoid about learning the lines and getting the lines correct.
Well, tell the casting people that you're dyslexic. I mean, I'm extremely sensitive to that, and I want to make sure that the actor doesn't think that that's going to hinder. Like, we'll get it right. Do you know what I mean? If you mess up a word, it's fine. I hope other casting directors are as amenable to dyslexic as I am, but I don't think you should be ashamed of it. I think it's part of, you know, just what we do. I mean, you have to read a script, you're reading somebody else's words, so and it takes you longer. I found most dyslexic actors have to memorize everything.
100%. I can't go into an audition like, you know, some actors can just pick up a script and read it.
No way, not a chance.
I'd be like trying to read it. I'd go straight back to being at school and having to stand at the front of the class reading something.
You know, just the what did they do to you, Elliot? What did they do to you?
They laugh.
Those mean British boys.
That's a fear for me. And there's a lot of, obviously, I'm not the only dyslexic actor. There's a huge amount of actors that are dyslexic.
A huge amount. And very successful ones, too.
Exactly. Tom Cruise. No, that's there you like go. The kind of, you know, straight away. Top of the mountain there. But no, I mean, I started off with TV. So I did Hollyoaks, but my audition for that.
Oh, you did Hollyoaks. Yeah.
I did Hollyoaks, but the character was kind of ripped straight from Skins. And the funny thing was that the audition my agent put me for was like a role that was like a one episode. He was meant to be in like one or two scenes, and I was completely wrong for it. I was 21. Yeah. I was like really skinny, and I was going in for this role that was meant to be like this big, bulky, muscly guy, and he was meant to be a bodybuilder. That was essentially the part, and I was just like, I mean, I'll go in because, like, yeah, I'll give it a go.
Who casts that?
So back then, it was a lady called Debbie Grain, who I don't know if this was like, obviously I'm 35 now. So this was when I was 19.
I'm 48.
It's a long time ago.
I'm 48 as of December 31st. I was 48. I just turned 48. So
I would have never have guessed that at all. We both got baby faces.
Because I'm a vampire, because I don't go out in the sun. So that's the issue.
That's the trick.
And also, if you're a casting director, you're like a mole, and you're always indoors. You're never outside. You're never casting outside. You're in the office 12 hours a day under fluorescent lights. So that's my secret.
That's the key. Stay out of the light. Listen,
no
to,
sunlight.
The
and you and you
listen,
leave and you go in at like kind of in the later morning, like around maybe 9 or 10. But you don't leave till it's dark out. So your face never sees direct sunlight. So
yeah,
so you went in. So they liked. Well, I mean, that's a very good casting director, bringing you in for something that's against type, at least how it's written. And you were the best candidate for it, you know?
Well, no, this is the weird thing, right? So
what?
I went in and they were seeing so many people for this part that we basically all went in fives and then we just lined up.
Okay, I've never done
And
that before. That must be some British thing.
I don't think it's even, I've never seen it before or since. So it was obviously, they were like looking for a look, I guess. And
Well, I mean, they do that in commercials probably, and like
yeah, it felt
that
more like
kind
a
of thing, but
commercial. Yeah, it felt
yeah.
more like that. But I didn't get the part. So essentially, I went in there, I stood there with these five other guys. And then just as we were about to leave, I just remember thinking, how can I stand out? Like, we just had to stand there and say one line. And I was thinking, I'm
Do you
never, you know,
remember what the
how?
line was? Do you remember what the line was?
I can't remember what it was. It was something
Oh,
really
come
simple, just like
on.
a
You
short
remember
line.
it.
No, I honestly don't. But I remember what I basically, as I was leaving, I thought, I need to do something to stand out. And I
Oh my
made a
God, what did you
joke.
do?
It was a terrible joke that I've actually used since because I thought it might work again. Something about because
Has
there was a
it?
whole line
But
of
has it?
produced.
But has it, Elliot?
I don't
No,
think so. I think it's
no,
backfired. I think I've stopped using it now. It was so,
no.
what was it? It wasn't even funny, but the casting director like laughed,
Okay.
and then I kind of, you know, got to sort of be like, oh, and have a moment, a very brief moment. Anyway, I left the audition room and 2 months later, still heard nothing. So I was like, I haven't, you know, they were
Well, you
filming
didn't
it.
get
It's done. Didn't get that.
that, yeah.
And then I remember I was in the car with my mum going up. She's a makeup artist and I was driving to the BBC with her. And I was going with her because I was like, I've got nothing to do. I'll come with you. And I'm out of work, actor struggling. And I get this call from my agent and my agent's like, I don't really know what you've done here, but basically the part you went for, you didn't get. But they're offering you a 3 month contract and they've written you a part. So I was like,
No,
what?
that happens. Yeah, that happens. It's amazing.
That was
That's
I
great.
was in my first sort of big job, and then I ended up doing it for a year and a half. So it was
Look at
like
you.
it was the craziest thing. And I realized now how lucky that was. That was like absolute fluke. But since then I've gone off and I've done feature films, so I've been doing more films. The first film I did was Northern Soul, which was like this. It's a period film set in the 70s about Northern Soul music, and it
Oh,
was my
cool.
first lead in a feature, and it was again a lot of luck. It was my I was doing a modeling job, and I was again, this is when I was like 22, did this job, and I met this photographer, and she was writing this script called Northern Soul, and she just said to me, she was like, "You look like John Clarke." Like proper, she's proper northern. Like you look, John Clark, and I was like,
Yeah.
okay. And
You're
so she was like, "I'm going
like,
to send you
thank
this
you.
script." Yeah, I was like,
Yeah.
okay. And John Clark was a fictional character in this film, and I stayed in touch with her. And over a period of 6 years, we worked on the script, worked on the accent. It's not my accent. I'm from the south, and I learned to do this northern soul dancing. And 6 years later, we shot the film, and it was my first lead. And that was like basically the start of getting feature films. So from there, I've just been hopefully steadily working, fingers
That's
crossed, keep that
great.
going. But
Congratulations. That's a fun kind of way in, you know? I mean, it's like it's not unusual for a good casting director to remember someone for another role. I mean, that's what we do. So that's why actors should always know that even if you're going in for something and you don't get it, there's always a chance, because that's our job is to remember, you know, and gate and sort of clock people and remember them. Because when another role comes up, it's like, wait a second, remember that guy who made that really bad joke? Let's bring in him. Let's just offer it to him, because the joke was so bad. He's perfect for this terrible, this douchebag that we're casting on the show.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that
You
how it
never
went?
know.
Is the guy a
Yeah, I'm
douchebag?
pretty sure
Yeah.
it was, yeah,
Yeah.
a
So
complete douchebag.
yeah.
So they went,
Yep.
you.
Totally. So I mean, so that's a good thing that actors should always remember. You know, it's never, even if you don't feel like you're right, or maybe you're bummed after you leave, just, you know, just remember that we're constantly, you know, keeping track of everybody that we see, everybody making, and not just mentally making notes, you know, and trying to really, you know, it's our database in our brain, basically, you know. So you
Do you
made an
have like
impression.
a, well, that's what you hope, isn't it? And you hope it's not a bad one as well. You can always slip up and do something and you think, oh, why did I?
I give people second chances, because sometimes you're having a bad day, and maybe. And not just in acting, maybe you're just having a bad day, you know, personally, and you come in and maybe you don't give the best impression. And some people that would turn, and so I try to give people a second chance. If they come in again and they're an asshole, then it's like, okay, this is you. But I try to always, I don't, on first meeting an actor, I never just say, they're not either they're not right for the role or they're bad, because I don't know what's going on, in their lives, and in actors that I see over and over again, I know them, I've been doing this, I've been getting paid for it since 1997, but I started in college in 1996. So, yeah. And so it's been a really long time. And, so I know a lot of actors and I know them well. I know them, I know if they're having a bad day and they come in and they're off, and I'll be like, okay, what's going on? Let's figure this out and we'll just get it down. Yeah. And it is usually like personal things can really, affect an audition. And that's the great part of, being with actors in the room. And what I miss desperately, with COVID and stuff, and that we're still not in America, for the most, I mean, theater has gone back, live, because they have to audition people with choreography and musicals and stuff like that. But film and television in America still hasn't gone back. I mean,
still nothing, no tapes. There's
well,
no
there's
tapes
some,
now.
There'll be, it's not all tapes. I do Zoom auditions. I try to do Zoom auditions with the actors. So at least if it's people that I know, it's easy and quick and fast, but to meet new actors is my only option. So, so I get to know them a little bit before they read and stuff, but I do get ask for a lot of self tape. Sometimes if it's somebody I know really well, who I know could just nail it and doesn't need any direction from me, just like tape yourself. Fine. I'll be good. Sometimes I have to have, if it's somebody I don't know, but I see that there's like a little, there's potential there, I'll ask the agent to have them call me, or I'll email with the actor and say, and give them the direction that they need, because, with self tapes, you actors are taping in a vacuum, and that's not fair. Because at least if they come in the room with me, I can give them like the background of whatever they're reading for, or show them any traps of the scene, or, stuff like that. So, but what I really truly miss is, seeing actors every day and being able to, work with them one-on-one and get the scene down exactly like how I need it and just be done. Yeah. The self-tapes is a big time suck for me.
It must be a completely different process as well when you're not actually in the room and you're not able to direct them quite the
same way. And I know,
if
somebody does such a great job, but they just missed one thing, and I knew if they were in the room with me, I could just said, okay, one more time, do this, and then I would have had it. Now I have to call the agent, say, okay, I'll have to talk to them on the phone, or just give them this note, have them retape. And, in television, which is, now the majority of work, we have deadlines and stuff. It goes really fast. I have a little more leeway with film, but it's still a problem when somebody does a great job, they just have to change one little thing and I have to have them retape. And I hate making the actors retape. I mean, it's not fair. It's not that it's not fair. I just feel like you have to tape yourself. You realize that the service that we provide for you of a camera being there, a reader, somebody to read with, a background so you look nice, good lighting, we provide all of that for you. And now you're all stuck doing it yourself in your like kitchen with like a random curtain up behind you with your iPhone. I mean, it's like, it's really,
tell
I
you
feel
what
bad.
Though, I think it's become more elaborate, because I feel like, I don't know,
well, some
if,
people
for
get
you,
real
it must have changed a lot
it.
As well.
No,
yeah,
some people get
people
real
got
fancy
cameras
with it.
Now.
But like, but that's the thing. I feel like some people, like, honestly, I don't care what your audition looks like. Like, you could do it on your iPhone in your car for all I care, as long as it's a good, as long as the acting is exactly what I need. I actually kind of prefer those sort of like gritty kind of gorilla tapes that are kind of fun. But some people who are very savvy with electronics, with video or digital, I'm old, so I'm like electronics, and they're good with electronics. But if they're good with editing, or good with computers, or good with cameras or iPads, like I'm like ridiculous. So I don't think they have an advantage, not in my world, but there might be directors or casting directors that prefer a pretty shiny tape, So it's very interesting.
I always find that sometimes when you've got a tape, maybe I shouldn't say this, I don't know if I'm allowed to, but I saw basically, I won't mention who the actor is, but I saw a tape that basically I got from a friend who was of someone quite well known going for quite a big show. And his tape was him in his house walking around holding his phone like this and doing it. And the tape was, he did it, his acting was amazing. But I was like,
Yeah.
God, I don't know if I would take the risk
No, but I
on
would.
doing that, you know.
See, it depends on the casting director. For me, do that for me. I want to
Yeah,
see that.
I'll take
I
note of
want to
that.
see. Yeah, I want to see if it's a car. Like, I mean, it's not. I know it's crazy, but if the scene takes place in a car, do it in a car. I mean, this is even before COVID. Some of the best auditions I ever received, especially, I mean, a lot of them happened on Glow, which was really interesting, which I loved. I love my cast on Glow so much. A
Love
lot of the
that show.
people,
So good.
a lot of my favorite women and also Marc Maron had to self-tape because I was in New York before I went out to LA. But when I started it in New York, and I knew Mark was the only person I was going to show. So I wanted him to get a di like tape himself and just nail it, which he did. And he sat at a desk, like Sam, like in the scene, and it was perfect, you know. And Kate Nash did this cool kind of retro. It was totally 80s. She used like a filter on the camera that made it look like an 80s TV screen for her audition. Brilliant.
Amazing.
Ellen Wong did all her stuff outside. It was, I mean, they were incredible, you know, and the creativity for me, you know, really makes those tapes stand out. You know, I'm not saying be crazy and go to a location or something, but if it's inherent in the script or the sides or, you know, the whatever, I mean, I love creativity and I love, because you have to understand too, I'm watching talking head after talking head after talking head. Thousands of tapes, thousands and thousands. So if somebody does, mixes it up a little bit, you know,
Yeah.
and if it's insane or crazy, I'll just call you to say I loved it. But if I, you know, depending on who the director or the producer is, you know, they're not going to get it. So just have them do it. Same acting, just have them do it like stationary camera, keep it like that, you know. So I'm trying to get you the job, basically. That's my. I want everybody who reads to get the job because it makes my job done.
Well, that's the key. You've got to remember that like actors go in there and they tell themselves they're like hyperventilating, worrying, and actually you just need to go in there and you need to give the casting director what they want. You just need to do a good job. And sometimes you overcomplicate things and overthink it.
and most I'm rooting for you know. I want this part cast. I have like 40 other parts I have to cast. I want you to come in and nail it, whoever you are. You know?
I have to ask, well, we will go back to the beginning and how it all started for you, but there's a couple of things I wanted to ask you because some of your casts have been really interesting, and I'm just really intrigued to sort of how it came about. For instance, I mean, the film Can I Ever Forgive You? Can You Ever Forgive Me? Sorry.
It's
That
okay.
film is brilliant, and one of my favorite actors, Richard E. Grant, obviously he's
Mine
like
too.
British
I know.
royalty.
And a
His
wonderful,
career.
lovely man. I mean,
Oh
the
man, I
kindest,
can imagine.
such a sweet man.
And so how did that casting come about? Was because his career, like he's had such an amazing career, and I mean I always loved him
Well,
in
with
things like
Nail and I
Whitman
is
and
like,
I.
yeah, I mean,
Love
it's
it.
like he's legend, you know what I mean? So
Is
but
that
with
as big
that,
out in the States? Is that a well-known film out there?
no, to people like me it is, but no, I don't think
But you know,
so.
yeah. Yeah.
I told you I'm an Anglophile, so it's
It's
a
a
little
very
weird.
British film. I can't imagine it kind of
Yes,
traveling too well.
I've loved Richard. I don't remember a time I didn't know or love Richard Grant in my life, you know. So when I was working on that, there was another actor attached to play that part, and because of scheduling things, they fell out. So we were sort of like, what are we going to do, you know? Richard was somebody like on the list, you know, somebody who was really special and met with our director, and they hit it off, and it couldn't have, and with Melissa, couldn't have been better, a better combo, really. And it was a blessing that he was available. And because again, it was kind of a last minute thing because we had somebody already in that role, and it worked out the way it was supposed to. I mean, it really, I mean, with a part like that, we weren't going to read anyone. He met with our director to make sure they were still on the same page, you know? So, but he's not going to read, you know, obviously he's Richard B. Grant. And so that's how it came about. You know, you're just kind of brain when somebody kind of falls out, you're just kind of brainstorming who you can offer it to, who's available, who'd be interested, you know, who'd be great. And he was our guy, and it was amazing.
I love it. His performance in that as well is something that I don't feel like I've watched a lot of his movies, and I don't feel like I've seen him do the things that he does in that movie. There's like obviously a very the one scene that really hit me is, you know, the obviously he has a very emotional scene near the end, and I was like, I just think of Richard O'Grant as just being hilarious and just brilliant and everything, but to see that side of him, I was like, wow, that's great casting, because you're like, that I didn't expect that.
Guess what? He can do anything.
He's an actor. He can act.
he's one of those journeyman actors who can pretty much deliver whatever you need.
But his career like has been amazing, but since that film, he's really like he's hit another stratosphere.
I was so excited to see him in Loki. I'm so excited to see him anywhere. Do you follow him on social media?
Yeah. I've actually been in contact with him, trying to get him on here. Trying to get him fit it in at some point. But
He's so wonderful. And his daughter, Olivia, is a casting director.
Yeah. And she's doing also, great as well.
She's amazing. Yeah, she works with Lucy Bevan, who are friends, I'm so excited for her, you know.
I've never met either of them, but I feel like they're lovely people, and I hopefully will one day.
Lucy's amazing. I haven't met Olivia. She joined Lucy after, because I try to go to London a few times a year before COVID, and I've hung out with Lucy. I have a lot of very good friends. Some are casting directors in London that I miss very much seeing. So, but Lucy is also just incredible. She's an incredible casting director, a hilarious woman, and Olivia has been working with her and doing an amazing job.
Well, yeah, I mean, Lucy Bevan does some of the biggest things over here.
She's great.
She's someone. I mean, all these like amazing casting directors that you know, I've sometimes had the opportunity to go in and meet briefly, or had an audition for whatever. And then this is what's so great about this: I get to like contact these people that I admire and people that they've cast these amazing things, and get to chat to them. And that's why it's just so much fun for me. This is, to be fair, it's purely selfish. I just get to have a chat, and then luckily the audience like enjoy it listening to it. So that's
what are you doing then talking to an American like me? Then you should be talking to all the Brits.
Oh no, you see, I've cleared out. I've done all the Brits now, and now moving across the pond. That's it. I've cleaned out over here almost. So no, it's really exciting actually to start this season. I've started spreading further over and kind of having more Americans. Because I've pre-recorded a lot of stuff for this season already.
Oh really? So you can't say who it is, can you?
I can't, because I don't know when this will come out, and then I might say something.
You can email it to me. It's fine.
Yeah. No, but it's very good. Like obviously with the award season and coming up, that's something that obviously figuring out that people are going to be there, or they've got, you know, they're going to be nominated for this, nominated for that. It's a good time right now to have people on, especially, you know, getting American guests. So it's exciting to have more and more people on. But when it comes to Richard E. Grant and that casting, not only that, but Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah. She was already attached to the film when I came on. Yeah, so
but she's like, obviously she's primarily known for comedy. So again, that is like it's a different role for her.
Elliot,
do you like mixing it up?
It's not about mixing it up. But comedy is exponentially harder to do than drama. So more times than not, you'll find that a comedic actor is a wonderful dramatic actor. None of that surprised me in the least. And also, she did some movies before Can You Ever Forgive Me that were dramatic too, you know. So
true, very true, yeah.
So that didn't surprise me at all. She's very talented, and like I said, if you can do comedy, you can do drama.
You pretty much do anything, can't you? It's the timing and everything else.
Much harder to make people laugh.
And I wanted to, if we go back right to the beginning, like before you even like became an associate casting director, before everything, where did that interest come from? How did you kind of one day be like, oh, I want to be a casting director one day? Like where did that come from?
Well, that came a little later. I always knew since I was probably like 7 or 8 years old, I was in love with film mainly, and television, and films that were shown on television, obviously, because it was the 80s. And
the best era. It's the best
The
era
what?
for film. Best
It's
era
what
for film, the
it
80s. Love it.
is. And I loved it. And I have terrible stage fright. I never wanted to be an actor. That wasn't ever even a consideration. The only job, like the only things you knew about film back then were there were directors and there were actors. And you knew like there was producers and writers. I didn't think producing or writing was for me. But I thought back then I was just like, I'm gonna be a director, you know. So I went to NYU for cinema studies. I also love film history. It was very likely I could have taught, I would have taught film. Or I wrote for the NYU Torch. I did press junkets and film reviews and for the paper. I liked that very much. And so, but I, so on my, every semester I did an internship. I was in New York, I was at NYU in film and radio and television, trying to figure out where I fit in the business. Was it going to be on set? Was it going to be in the office? Was it going to be a script supervisor or an editor? You know, I didn't know. I was trying them all on for size, and I was working on a film the summer before my senior year, and I kind of fell into casting, and it was a light bulb went off. You know, I remember going home. It was a summer internship, and I remember going home and telling my mom. I go, I think I'm supposed to do casting, because I had a freakish memory for actors and films. Like it would be a trick, my friend, like a party trick with my friends. He'd be like, name every film this person's in, or what, you know, what is this? It was just something that my whole family could do, actually, my mother, my father, and my sister. And once I realized I could make a living doing that, because there wasn't the IMDb, there wasn't the internet, you know, there were when I made a list, it had to come from my brain. I didn't
God,
have
yeah,
any
don't
other.
even think about that. That must have been a completely, oh man, that was so hard. You really have to
Not for
sort of.
me. Well, not for me. And that's why I think the connection, I was like, oh, okay, this is why I can remember all these things. And so from that moment on, every internship I did was in casting. So I'd heard about a program out. I wanted to visit LA because I didn't know where I wanted to end up. And there was a program that I was able to do through Ithaca College and NYU, where you got to LA for a semester. So it was the fall semester of my senior year. And you get school credit for doing an internship out in LA. And I was fortunate enough to get an internship at Universal Television Casting with Megan Brandman. And she took me under her wing and taught me how it was a paid internship too, which is crazy. And I was on the
Nice.
Universal Studio lot. Well, across the street, there used to be like this old building, converted building. But and that was a dream come true, just walking on the studio lot. It was my first time in California. And like just seeing where all of these old movie stars had tread, and you know, it was just sort of very sentimental to me. And Megan was wonderful, and she taught me how to cast. She taught me the basics of casting. You know, she taught me all, because it can be a very clerical job. You know, you also have to learn how to read with actors. I was scared to death to read with an actor. I didn't want to read with an actor. That was like, I couldn't imagine anything more terrifying. I told you I have stage fright. She forced me to read with actors. And she was just an incredible teacher. And so I got back in January before graduating in the spring, and she called. The only thing happening in 1997 in New York with Universal Television was the original Law and Order. So she called over to Suzanne Ryan and Lynn Kressel's office in New York and said, I have a girl, she's trained. She doesn't have to be an intern first. You could just hire her as an assistant if you're ever looking for one. And they were. So when I graduated college, my first job, I was the casting assistant on Law and Order.
Wow.
And I was there for about a year. And when you work on Law and Order, before computers,
Yeah.
before email, before anything, and you're calling out appointments, you're opening physical submissions, there's no breakdown services or spot, you know, for you spotlight or anything like that. It's trial by fire, and you learn how to do everything really fast, really well. And it was an amazing experience. Suzanne Ryan was so generous and taught me a lot. So that's how I got there. And then just coincidentally, the offices, it was Universal, down the hallway, it was a floor on Park Avenue and a building in Park Avenue. The other end of the hall that Universal owned, the end of the hallway was Capra Productions, which was Martin Scorsese's production company. And Ellen Lewis is his casting director. And I would see her in the bathroom sometimes or on the elevator. And we'd start talking. And she was going to be finished. She was finishing up Bringing Out the Dead at that time, that film. And she was going to be
It's
leaving.
such an underrated movie.
I love that
I
movie.
love
I know.
that film. Yeah. Sorry, carry
She
on.
was, no, that's okay. She was finishing that up. So she was going to be leaving Marty's office because she was going on to another film. And she asked if I wanted to work with her. And I didn't even understand back then that sometimes some casting directors stay with the director forever. And Ellen is one of those. And Martin Scorsese was a hero to me. This is all just weird coincidence. I went to NYU because he went to NYU. So he was my favorite. He is my favorite filmmaker. So I was like, oh, well, she worked with him on that. That's fine. But I was excited to get into film, but I didn't realize we would be working on Martin Scorsese's movies in the future.
That's
So which I did.
mad.
I got to work on The Aviator and Gangs of New York and some other things. And so I went with her. And I was with her for a little over 7 years because, casting is an apprenticeship sort of. There's no way to really learn it. You don't go to school to learn it. I mean, there is a way to learn it, but you don't go to any proper formal training. So I was with her for 7 years, and I learned all film, and I love film. But I also was lucky enough to work with another amazing. I've had amazing mentors in my life, Marcia DeBonis, who's an act character actress and also a casting director. And every pilot season in New York, she would cover it. So I would work with her for 3 months out of the year. And I got to know every actor in New York because we would just be taping everybody for every pilot. This is when pilot season was proper pilot season. And so I got to do that. And then I worked on movies the rest of the year. So I got to learn how to do television and film simultaneously, which came in handy when television took over the planet. So, yeah.
That's mad, is it? And at such a young age as well, going straight into it like that is just
Oh, I was, yeah. I mean, I started getting paid for what I did when I was 20.
amazing. And what is that like to suddenly be like, oh, okay, I'm now assistant casting directing on
No,
a Scorsese movie,
I was a
casting
casting
associate.
associate. They have renamed it now to say associate casting director, I guess, to sound fancier. I was a casting associate, and I was
I
an assistant.
don't know the differences, to be honest.
There is no difference. It's just kind of like an order of words. But I was Ellen's casting assistant for probably about 3 years, and then promoted. I mean, my job really didn't change very much except just the experience to a casting associate with her for the rest of the time.
Okay. That must have been crazy though to grow up on his films and then be a part of it,
It
to
was
suddenly
wonderful.
be like, wow.
It was sort of. By the time I felt like I had peaked at 25 because I was in the same room with Martin Scorsese and filming an actor, and he was coming up by me to frame the shot, and I just thought, I can die now. Like, I'm done. I was
I've
25.
completed it. It's
I was like, I'm
fine.
done. If nothing else ever happens in my life, I'm done.
Now for a quick break. Are you a writer and director, actor, costume designer, perhaps makeup artist? Are you interested in camera? This is the place to share your journey. We want to hear from you. How did you start your career? Has it started yet? And perhaps if you're feeling brave, share with us your most embarrassing film-related moment. So slip into our DMs at Life and Film Pod on Instagram. Check out the Patreon at patreon.com/lifeandfilm, where you'll get episodes early and uncut, amongst other treats. And don't forget to follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you enjoy this episode, please leave us a positive rating. Add us on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok at Life and Film Pod, and find our video episodes on YouTube by searching Elliot James Langridge Life and Film. Essentially, please like and subscribe everything. It makes a huge difference. Thank you. This is also a space we'd like to fill with sponsors and advertisement for like-minded podcasts. So please get in touch. And back to the show. But you weren't done. You went on and you did so many other things as well on top of that. The kind of the I'm not going to blow you too much smoke up your ass, but the all the different jobs you've done. You like you can.
Nah, you know,
The,
I'm not well with I don't work well with compliments, but yes,
but there's
continue.
so I mean.
This is your life. Yes.
Yeah, but the breadth of there's so many different things that you've done, like going from Scorsese, but like doing comedy to like it's just such a different range of things. Have you got a particular like is there a sort of an area that you particularly like casting? Is it comedy or is it drama? Is there something
Well,
you're
I was
particularly excited
always
about?
I've been obsessed with comedy as well since I was a kid. My father and mother both loved any comedy features. My dad sort of had me sitting and watching, Abbott and Costello and Mel Brooks and just stand-ups and Richard Pryor, and my mom had me watching George Carlin and lots of comedy when I was younger. I mean, that was our family pastime, was sitting in the living room, in the family room, watching films and comedy, And my mom also had more of a dramatic streak, so she helped me out with that too. But my dad was loved film and loved comedy. So I was schooled very early, probably with things I probably shouldn't have been watching at such a young age, but I'm so glad I did. And so I got their sensibilities. They were pretty young parents, they were only about 25 when they had me. So we watched a lot of cool, hip things. And so I love that more than anything. And when I worked with Ellen doesn't cast many comedies. So that was 7 years of a lot of drama, which is great. But I miss comedy. Comedy was a hobby for me. I would go to clubs and stand up and improv. And I sort of made a habit of after work, because doing drama sides every day can get really depressing. So after work, where our offices were on 26th Street, UCB had a theater right down the street. So after work, to decompress, I would go over to the UCB and just
Oh,
watch
cool.
comedy shows. And it was purely just a hobby and just to keep my sanity. And when I decided to go out on my own, I really wanted to do comedy because I loved it so much. And I was again just really lucky and fortunate that Allison Jones, who's you don't get more iconic or legendary in terms of comedy casting than her. She was looking for someone in New York to do a search for Superbad. And she had heard my name from some agents, and she called me. And I was like, I mean, Allison Jones, she was like just a name on a screen, but like a legend. Like, not even, I mean, she was just so up there for me in terms of comedy casting. And she called me and she said, I heard all these UCB kids, I need to, and Greg Mottola was directing, who I had already known Greg before, so we were having sessions with him. And she's like, you want to do this? And I was like, work with you? Yes. Oh my God, it wasn't even a question. And we just had an amazing time together, and our sensibilities are so similar that after I did that job for her, she just kept hiring me to do New York casting for a lot of her films. And that's how I was introduced to Will Ferrell and Gary Sanchez Productions and Judd Apatow, and I mean, you name every comedy, Paul Feig, I got to do all the New York stuff for it, and it was through Allison, and it was dreamy. It is dreamy. It's still great. Yeah,
It is
so
dreamy.
they're
There's
all
one
dreamy.
particular casting which I absolutely love. The Other Guys,
Yeah,
with Michael
I did the
Keaton.
New York. I did the New York casting for that.
And Michael Keaton in that film
So
is
great.
just so good. And I feel like he's always been a legend, but I feel like his career had kind of
No,
no, I don't.
it kind of like plateaued, and then he did the Other Guys,
Yeah.
and then things started
And
happening
now
again.
he's
'Cause
like a
yeah,
god.
well, he should be. He always was. He was always great,
He's
but
always been brilliant. He's always been
yeah.
brilliant. But his performance in that particularly, and he's not even in it that much in comparison to some of the other characters, but he steals the show. I cry
He
with laughter every
steals
time I
every
watch a scene.
scene. When he was doing the TL, it was like the TLC, or it was Destiny's Child or
It
TLC Live. I can't
was
remember.
TFC,
Oh, that was, and they're like, wait, did you just say that on purpose? What's
yeah.
happening?
Did you just quote?
Yeah.
So funny.
No, his
It's so
timing is
good.
impeccable. So.
There's a. I'm sorry. I'm just geeking out here. But the bit when Will Ferrell's like on the floor and he's like, "Help him! Help. He's dying!" He just does this really like desperate. Just it creases me up every time. I
Yeah.
just love it. But anyway,
No,
no. I just wanted to. I
Busy was
wanted to
wonderful.
just shout out to Michael Keaton because
Always,
he's the
always important
boss.
to shout out to Michael Keaton. I know.
But to go from that to then you've got the Pacific. I mean, you can't get any more different than that. I mean, that is like two different realms of the industry. How I mean, it's a completely different sort of thing, but when you're casting something like that, it's obviously Spielberg, Tom Hanks, it's like this huge production.
Well, yeah, I was the New York Meg Lieberman, who again is probably the most influential person in my career. But I'd gone to LA and I worked for her for a year. She had a television casting director, and an icon. And I wanted to move to LA for a year, and I wanted to move to LA permanently. I only made it a year. I missed my family too much, so I came home. But
Yeah, fair
working with
enough.
Meg for that year was like going to graduate school for casting. And we worked on a couple of shows. We watched a Sean Cassidy show called Invasion, which was so fun because it was sci-fi, because I also love sci-fi and horror and all those kind of things. So that was great. And then we did a very dramatic miniseries for ABC called The Path to 9/11, which was based on the 9/11 official report. And you couldn't get more upsetting than that. It was actually a wonderful production, but ABC, but there were so many players in it that were sort of exposed. It was aired once, and
Oh,
you can't
wow.
get it on DVD. You can't get it anywhere. But that was several months of really, because I was in New York when 9/11 happened, so it was very hard. And then I moved back home. I miss my family too much, and at that point, it was time for me to go out on my own. I had been working with amazing people for about nine or 10 years. And that's a huge leap, because there's no want ads for casting directors. There's no way to, we don't have agents that submit us or get us jobs. It's just by word of mouth. So I had to turn down a ton of casting associate jobs to say, I don't want to be a casting associate anymore. I want to be a casting director and considered for those jobs. So it was a scary, a little scary time. And I got some small gigs, and it was kind of building, and that stuff with Allison happened, and then I got a little disillusioned. And I was talking to Meg, who's like family to me, and I was like, yeah, I don't know, maybe I should just go back to school for primatology. I double majored in anthropology. I love science. And
I did not expect that.
nobody does, but I do. I love science. I was a big nerd in school. So, and I was like, I should maybe just go back to school, because I love gorillas. I love studying primatology and stuff. And she's like, shut up. She's like, just shut up. She's like, this is, you're not supposed, you're not gonna do, you're gonna do casting. And she said, I'm hiring you to the New York casting on The Pacific, which was the companion piece to Band of Brothers. And I said, but I don't think I want to do it. And she's like, you're doing it, and it's gonna heal you, and you're gonna be okay. And so I did, and it was an amazing experience. I love anything historical. A lot of One of the characters specifically was from I'm from New Jersey, was a hero in New Jersey that I had to sort of cast and look for. It was a wonderful experience. And we've had casting directors, New York casting, London casting, Toronto, Canadian casting, Meg, and it was I got to cast some of my favorite New York actors. And it was a wonderful experience. But so that's how that happened. And again, it's easier to cast dramas than it is to cast comedy. So there's not a big, for me, there's not a huge, I like doing both. I like doing both very much. So that's how I got to the Pacific.
How did that what the contra like changing from comedy like and then going on and doing something like that, but becoming also at the same time you're becoming your own casting director. That transition, obviously you said it was a bit kind of you weren't sure about it and you might go off and
Oh,
do something
it
else,
was
but
terrifying. It was
how
terrifying.
long
It was
did
like,
that take to
well, it felt like an eternity. But in all honesty, it took about 4 months till somebody called me to do a cast. My first official casting director job was on a sketch comedy show for MTV called Human Giant. It was Rob Hubel and Paul Scheer. It was actually a UCB troupe. So I had seen them live, and they knew me. And MTV wanted to make their live show into a TV sketch show, sort of like Key and Peele or like, Amy Schumer, that kind of thing. And they hired me, and that was my first foray into television, like television on my own casting. And again, then from there, I think Superbad. I would have to look at my IMDb. I'm too old to remember all that stuff, but After that, then Allison called me, then that kind it kind of snowballs. It starts to snowball, really. And the people are like, oh, Jen knows all these funny people. She knows all these people. So it you become more of a commodity to anybody who's in LA looking for funny New York actors.
Oh yeah, I mean it's crazy. Superbad. So I Superbad is one of my favorite movies as well. I absolutely love that. I remember trying to get my parents to watch it. Wow, this was when it came out, and it just come out on DVD, and I was like, "You gotta watch this!" And obviously, I was at the prime age for it, and they were
Right.
not. And
Oh,
they were sit. I was like, "Just watch it." And I went up upstairs and left them to watch it, and I came back down like halfway through.
the
And it was the scene where he's drawing
oh,
all the dicks on the
okay,
table,
yes, on the
all
thing,
that
yeah.
stuff. And I walked in, and the minute I saw that scene, I just realized I was like, yeah, I don't know if this is for them. And I was looking at them, and they were like, and I was like, wrong generation, I think, maybe. But I loved it. It's such a good film.
It was
But yeah,
fun. It
no,
was fun.
it was
It was
great.
fun to work on anything working on anything I work on with Allison. We have a blast. She's one of my best friends, so
I
we have a
mean
great time.
that cast as well now. I mean, they're all doing incredibly well. It's insane to think that that cast was in one film. But yeah, also Scott Pilgrim as well is another one where obviously one of the cast members from that went on and did that. And that's a real cult film. Like that
It
is
has
like
become that. Yes. Allison
yeah,
brought
it
me onto that to be the New York casting director. So we had Allison in LA, me in New York, and Robin Cook in Toronto, where it was going to shoot. And I was a big Edgar Wright fan, a huge one, and I was very excited. And I knew what Scott Pilgrim was. I'd seen the Brian O'Malley, the graphic novels and stuff, and I was very excited to find all these sort of characters that were in a comics that, and Edgar was very specific and wanted to stay very true to the tone and the what they look like, and look like cartoons. I was looking at actors who had really big eyes or accentuated features, and we had a great time on that, and I was so happy to find so many of our cast in New York, because I love always putting New York actors into anything, so we
Oh,
cast
that's nice.
out of New York, we cast Kieran Culkin, Allison Pill. Mark Webber was in LA, but he was somebody I've known forever, Mark, and Satya Baba, so as the first evil ex,
It's so good.
we had a good time on that.
That film, I mean, I wasn't familiar with the graphic novel, but I can imagine on paper, if you're not familiar with it, it would be a very, you'd be like, how is this going to work on film? How is this going to like translate? And it's such a
Well, it just got filtered
unique
through
film.
it just got filtered through Edgar's brain, and you got it. That's what had to
Yeah,
happen.
Edgar Wright is just every single film he does is completely different, other than obviously the Cornetto trilogy, Shaun of the Dead and that lot. But the rest of his films are just completely, he just every time he goes, I'm going to do something completely different here. Yeah, I love watching his Baby Driver. It's just incredible. What a brilliant film that is. But I want to ask you a little about the process of actually casting. And is there, it's a difficult question because it's the question that every actor wants to know. They're like, how do I
What do
get a
you want
part?
to know?
What advice? But like coming into a room, like, so, I'm going in there and I've been called in for a part. Is there any advice you would give? I mean, it's a very broad question, but like just the simple things. Is there any advice you give to an actor coming in and reading for you?
I think that the most important thing good for an actor to know is that, and I don't know if a lot of actors like to know this, but it is true, and I've seen it happen a lot. You could come in and objectively give the best audition out of anybody who reads for the part and not get the role. And I've seen that happen hundreds of times. There are so many variables that are out of the control of the actor, that you could be the best and still not get it. We're dealing with people, so the people who are making the decisions, you might look like their ex-husband, or you may look like a bully that was mean to them in school. There's so many variables like that. I mean, also, there's a lot of, especially in television, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen, So they have to agree on one person, and sometimes that doesn't mean they're going to cast the best person. So I think the advice, and that I just posted something on Instagram that Judi Dench, it was a reel that Judi Dench had, I don't know if you've seen it, but she said,
I
she
did
goes,
see it, yeah.
yeah, she says it's just luck, you know, and it is. That's all it is. It's just being in the right place at the right time and delivering what those people need from you at that moment. And I think prepared, I think to be you be prepared for that moment when it comes. That's important, you know, and work on your craft. It's not like it's all luck, you know, but you still have to, you know, study you know, and study your craft and practice your craft. But at the end of the day, again, I've been in the rooms where I've seen people give the best audition. They do not get the part, and it has nothing to do with their acting. So my advice is that Bryan Cranston did this really fun, not fun thing, but he was asked, it's on YouTube, you can look it up, about going into an audition. And he said, look, what I do is I go in, I have fun, I consider I doing my job, I get to act for like 10 or 20 minutes. This was before he, you know, got huge or whatever. And he goes, I leave the room, I throw the sides in the trash, and I forget about it. And that's the best advice. Don't obsess. Don't be like, did I get it? Don't keep going back on what did I say something wrong? Did I do something? Did I upset someone? You know, it's out of your hands. So let it just be at, literally out of your hands. Take the sides, throw them in the bin, and move on. And if you get the part, great. If you don't hear anything, it's not you, you know? It just wasn't meant to be.
Yeah, no, great advice. I think that's important as well. That I think it's kind of it's in a strange way. It's kind of that's kind of comforting because you can just have bad luck. You can do everything you can to get a role, and at the end of the day, it's just not your day. You come in on the wrong
Yeah.
day, or
Or it's just not
you
your
don't
role.
look
And
like the brother
sometimes,
you're meant to be playing with, or whatever.
yes.
It's
Yeah. And sometimes not getting that job leads, if you would have gotten that job, you'd have missed out on the career-making opportunity that happens, you know, the next week. I've seen that too. I've seen someone not get hired for something that I thought they should have, and then in 2 weeks book the role that changes their life. And if they would have gotten the job that I did, they wouldn't have been available.
Mad. That's
And isn't
scary.
that?
That is scary though.
But
Yeah,
it, but
wow.
that's the way it is, you know. So I guess that's my advice, is to just, you know, do your best and be prepared for when that time, when that luck comes into play. But don't beat yourself up over something, you know, little things. Don't overthink, don't obsess. Just go in. And also just be, remember that we remember you. So even if you're not right for the part, or even if that director didn't think you were right for the part, maybe our next thing that we're doing, you're exactly right for the part. So it's never for nothing, you know?
Yeah, and this has been really inspiring, genuinely, and I've wasted too much of your time. I feel like we've been on here longer than I said that we would be.
It's
But
okay. I talk too
I
much. I was
no no
expecting
no
you.
I
Shut up.
really enjoyed it, and the audience will love it as well. Like, there's so many actors out there that need to hear these things. And that piece of advice at the end is, I think it's a great way to end.
Okay, that
And I
sounds
but
good.
I do want to ask you one thing though, just to end on a stupid note.
Most embarrassing moments,
I was working on a movie with
Oh wow, you
Allison.
know straight away what it is. You're like, this one.
Oh my God, because
Oh
I have this on film, and it's sort of,
wow, okay.
it's insane. So I was working on a film with Allison Jones, and I was in LA, and I was working out of her office, and we were Wilford Brimley was auditioning, and I was reading with all the actors, and the director said, Jen, will you go up and act next to him so that we can see so he can work off of you next to him instead of talking like point of view to the camera. And I was like, sure. But it's Wilford Brimley, you know. And do you know who he is in England?
Yeah, Wilford Brimley, the name rings a bell. What's he known for? I know that
Was it,
name.
I think the Waltons, Mom? I think my mom, and I told you I'm at my mom's. Mom. Yeah. Mom. She's not answering. Anyway, he's legendary. He did all these commercials for diabetes.
I'll look him up.
Yeah, I think it's the Waltons. I don't think I'm crazy. Anyway, he's icon. Oh, he was in Cocoon. He was the guy in Cocoon.
Oh, no, I do know him. Yes, I know who you're talking about.
So he was on, and also I just hate the fact that he was auditioning. That makes me sick. But anyway, because I don't think actors, I think attention must be paid, and I don't think actors like that should. So I agree. So I went, you know, so I was like, okay, I'll just stand up there next to him and read his lines to him. I was like, Allison, keep me off camera as much as you, because I don't want to be on camera. And he was reading with me, and I was off book at that point, so it was fine. And I was standing there next to him, and we were doing the scene. And at the end of the scene, we're supposed to walk off. He put me in a headlock and dragged me off the frame of the scene of the camera, like dragged me by the head. It was hilarious.
Oh my God. I bet you were like, what?
I was like, what the hell just happened? I was like, did you both remember just put me in a headlock and drag me off frame, off screen? And it was hilarious. Allison was on the floor laughing. I just didn't even know what to do. And I was just like, okay, thank you. But I have it on. At that time, we were burning it to DVD. I have the DVD, and it's still like a memory. I'll never forget it. I mean, who gets put in a headlock by Wilford Brimley?
Is that something that can be found on the internet? Or is it just you've got the
No, I would never. Are you kidding?
No, I just wondered if there was a copy of it somewhere. That's so funny.
Oh, there's a copy of it. I have it, and nobody's going to see it.
And so. No one will ever see it. That's amazing.
So I was humiliated because the director was in the room. There were two producers. And I was so embarrassed because I didn't know how to react. You know, I was just like, what do you do when somebody, you know, because it's really not, you know, you don't want to, you really shouldn't ever touch the casting people. That's something maybe you're, you know.
Yeah.
But he, you know, he's older and iconic, and he just did whatever he wanted. And I don't think he thought I was a casting director either. I think he thought I was just like a reader, you know. So that was that was probably one of the most embarrassing stories. And then Allison kept rolling the camera because she's hilarious. She knew we would die. We kept watching it afterwards. It was so horrible.
Oh my god!
Is that a good story?
No, it's great. Did he get the role?
No, but it had nothing to do with it. It had nothing to do with that. So
okay, that's even funnier though. It feels like one of those moments that it's either going to go your way or not. If you didn't,
it had nothing to do with that. No, we ended up just going in a totally different direction. But it was something.
That's really perfect.
Yeah.
It's a very strong image as well.
I'll send it to you on the side. I think I have it somewhere.
I promise I wouldn't show anyone. I'd love to see that. That's hilarious.
No,
thank
Allison
you so
and I
much.
Still laugh to this day because we couldn't even believe it was happening.
Oh my God.
Because you can't tell Wilford Brimley, like, let her go. You know, it was just sort of, I had to play it out. And I'm
a little too long, just. Oh no, that's amazing. Thank you so much for doing this. And you got back so quickly, Elliot. And like, I really appreciate it. And genuinely, it's just lovely to chat to you and like talk about all these things you've done. So, thank you so much.
Asking me, I really appreciate it. All right, have a great night.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, you too. Cheers. Thank you. It's the Laugh and Feel motherfucker. Subscribe
and like and follow. Thank you to our guest, Jennifer. And thank you to the Casting Society.